Do you want to build your brand by being a guest on industry-leading podcasts? If you're a business leader, an author, or a speaker, my guess is that you do. Picture this. You, a dynamic executive easily connecting with engaged audiences, turbocharging your top-of-funnel marketing, and creating a treasure trove of content with every episode. Podcasting is a game changer that you've been waiting for. And PodcastAlly.com is your VIP ticket to podcast PR success. Say goodbye to the ordinary and hello to the extraordinary exposure. Let the Podcast Ally team connect you with the best-in-class podcast for you to be a guest on. Head over to PodcastAlly.com and use the promo code DT for a 10% discount on Podcast Ally services. That's PodcastAlly.com, promo code DT. Welcome to High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. This season, we're diving deeper with more solo episodes, where I'll share the experiences that have led to recognition by EY, Forbes, Fast Company, and others. Not as a boast, but as milestones on my entrepreneurial path. From growing multi-million dollar firms to successful business exits and building high performance teams with a global perspective. I'll reveal the insights and strategies from my journey and share them with you so that we can win together. Alongside these solo episodes, we'll have industry visionaries and thought leaders, and we'll explore effective leadership. Ready to empower your leadership journey with real success stories? Let's embark on this transformational journey together. Welcome to another edition of High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. I'm really excited to be here, and the topic we're going to cover today is one that we all experience and need to get better at, and that is the art of negotiation, with our goal being to build bridges and not walls. If you think about the topic of negotiation, it really impacts really every aspect of our life. If you have kids, and you're negotiating with them to clean the room, if you have a team and you're negotiating with them on the resource, the quality level, the time level, the delivery time, if you will, of when a project needs to get done, negotiating a raise, buying a car, buying a house. So negotiation really impacts all the different levels of our life. And over the history of my career, whether it has been multi-million dollar negotiations to sell a company, whether it has been my role within an organization, when I am making sure that the framework and the portfolio of my responsibility meets with salary expectations and all that different kinds of stuff that we go through, whether it is, you know, I'm 52. And so with four kids, I've bought a bunch of cars over the years, right? One of the things that I've learned, independent of the negotiating situation, right, is that we all start from our particular point of view. And this is one of the things that I think people do incorrectly, because your point of view is something that you already understand. And so explaining that to the other person is fine, but explaining that first to the other person doesn't teach us anything. It doesn't allow us to create an environment where we get a better outcome. And so the one thought process that I want to share with you of the several key points is, number one, is looking at the perspective of the individual or individuals or organization that you're negotiating with. So it's all about, number one, is perspective. So when we look at that perspective from someone else, number one, we often can find out things that we can say yes to that are big to them, but of low value to us. So the giving up of that item, right, is not such a big deal. I'll give an example of my kids, right? Dad, after I clean my room, can we have ice cream? Well, no, you should just clean your room. Well, it depends. What am I trying to get done at this point? Am I trying to get perfect obedience? Am I trying to get the room clean? Am I trying to build a relationship with my kid while I'm teaching them something? So no, you shouldn't get something every time you do the right thing. But when you're learning successful habits as a young person, there's nothing wrong with a carrot and stick mentality, and using the carrot more often than not is good and powerful. So yes, David, if we clean our room this time, this one time, we're going to be able to go for ice cream. Now, we're not going to be able to get ice cream every time you clean your room because it's your responsibility. But to set the right expectation, I have no issue with providing you a cup of ice cream, an ice cream cone for a clean room. Now, if we're going to get ice cream for cleaning that room, it's got to be extra clean. That means it's got to be able to pass daddy and mommy's inspection. Does that make sense? Oh, yeah. Because my son at the time was focused on what he got, which was the ice cream, more important than what he had to do, and the fact that I said he'd have to do something extra because he added another component to the conversation. My point being, whether it is your kids and cleaning the room, or it is your employer and you're negotiating a raise, understanding what the other person or organization wants gives you the ability to do a couple of things. Number one, you can say yes. And the more that you can say yes in a negotiation, the less adversarial the conversation is. Second component to this, the more you know what somebody else wants, the more you can align it with things you can give that set a tone that you are a thoughtful, caring, right, and a good quality negotiating partner, right? And then finally, here's the key. If I know what you want, what your outcome needs to be, what you're motivated by, your emotional context of the negotiation, I also can steer clear of landmines that I don't want to step on unintentionally. Because my goal in a negotiation is to create the best outcome for me, my business partners, my family, depending on the context. It is not win and you as my negotiating partner experience pain. My goal is the best outcome possible. The best outcome possible, people call it a win-win, and that makes sense to a degree, but winning has degrees and context. If I get everything I want, I'm not as concerned about concessions I may need to get so that you are happy with the outcome also, right? And that's a way to explain that win-win. So number one is understanding the perspective of your negotiating partner. The second component of negotiation is timing. If you have a long window to make a decision, longer window, you have much more power and credibility. The faster you have to get something done, the less strength you have. Because if you're working against a predetermined timeline, that means urgency is not your friend. And that means that I try to get into conversations with folks, especially where there is a lot of financial impact, as early as possible, so that the emotion of being under time pressure doesn't cloud my negotiating partner's ability to make reasonable concessions that I may need. Because a lot of times you're talking to the person that is not the ultimate decision maker. That means you have to build in time frame for your negotiation, your conversations, that allow back and forth where they've got to go check with their constituents, where they've got to go investigate whether something works for them. Things of significance are not going to happen in a single Zoom call, a single meeting, a single dinner. The larger the stakes, the more the components and the more people that will be involved in the negotiation. And so time is a critical component to understand. And the more time that you have, the more that you can navigate the nuance and create that successful outcome. Whatever you've read about negotiation, whatever you have studied, the time and your experience, one of the things that I've found and a very critical element to successful outcome is understanding the personality of the team and the people that you're negotiating with. This is especially important when you are the smaller partner. For example, a lot of the businesses that I run, I am running a small boutique marketing firm, or I am running a Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Consultancy, where I am running a software engineering company. My partners were typically thousands of times bigger in terms of resources, in terms of experience, in terms of expectation than I was. We were dealing with enterprise legal teams with significant experience in M&A, specific experience in joint ventures and different things. And so on an experience level, we were out of our depth, out of our league, so to speak. And so a lot of times when you understand the personality and then the power dynamic, right? So it's the personality and the power dynamic between you and your counterpart, it helps you adjust your tone. When I'm the smaller party in a negotiation, I don't try to act like the big dog. If I don't understand something that's written in tremendous legalese, I will say, John, obviously you all have more experience. I'm trying to minimize our outside legal costs. In section 3, paragraph 4, there's just a lot of language. Can you just help me understand what this section means just in layman's terms? And then we can look at the legalese and how we want to structure it. But if you could just explain what you all are trying to accomplish, what you're trying to protect against in this particular section, they'll go forth and explain it, which is very different than if I use language like, I don't agree. You're using too much jargon. Anything that sounds combative versus conversational, right, doesn't put me in a position of strength, especially when I'm dealing with a larger partner. It actually creates a defensiveness in my partner. And I want you to understand a phrase that I'm using pretty specifically, my negotiating partner. Very few of the negotiations I've been a part of over the years, over the 30 years of my business career, have had to be adversarial. That didn't mean some of them were not, but most of them didn't have to be. It's the posture of the people, the personalities of the people, that sometimes make an adversarial conversation one that could have been done, completed over dinner, over a drink, over a cup of coffee. And so I try to make sure that in any of the language that I'm using, that I make sure that we have a conversational tone first to see how far that can go because, and this is super important, most negotiations are the start, not the finish. And you're going to have to work with these people again. And so your behavior, your style, the way that you push back on items is also a precursor for how you're going to work with this team, this organization, this company again in the future. And so negotiation is an opportunity to create partnership momentum, longevity of the relationship. So I'm very, very careful of the tone I use. And most important, when you have high octane personalities, these are folks that I've dealt with over the years, have graduated from the top schools, the MBA schools, the top law schools. And I'm just this guy from North Carolina, right? And happy to be underestimated. And a lot of times you will hear in the tone, well, Don, this is just the way that our contracts are structured. And we're not really in a mode to make any significant changes, right? Kind of a dominant tone. And so my response to some of those things is to desensitize, de-escalate any of that noise, any of that ego, and just say simply, listen, we're just getting started with our conversation. You know, I'm the rookie here at this relative to the talent that's in the room. So I may ask an occasional question that's somewhat redundant. So if you just give me some grace and explain those things. And then number two, the reason for some of the changes and kind of minimizing some of the legalese is simply wanting to make sure that we not only negotiate agreement in good faith, but we have a very clear document that articulates not only the letter of the law, but the intentions and our hope for aspirations to have a great working relationship. So whether we agree or disagree as we go through these dialogues, this is where this is my perspective on what we're trying to do with this contract, with this negotiation, with this document. And so I think it's understandable and important to understand the power dynamic and the personality so that you can manage accordingly. I try not to. Most people are. most people at the end of the day are emotional negotiators. They're having a win-lose conversation. One of the reasons I'm successful in negotiating outcomes, even if I don't have all the best cards, is I'm not a negotiating win or lose personality. I'm best outcome for all involved. And that is an important thing and an important distinction. Another pillar that I'd like to share with you all in terms of, you know, let's just break it down, not so much a corporate negotiation, but let's think about something that's all near and dear to our heart, right? Is negotiating your salary, your raise, your increase. Number one, you have the most leverage as an employee when you have demonstrated in a measurable way the high level of positive impact you deliver to the organization. Most of us want to be paid more, feel that we deserve more, feel that we're the best in the department. All of these things we feel. And a lot of times the way we feel can get in the way of logic, can get in the way of, are you negotiating for a pay raise during a time where the company has laid people off? Is there a recession? What is the financial strength and health of your organization? And most importantly, what is the true business value of your contribution to your manager, to your manager's manager, and the company as a whole? And so before I get into anything financial, one of the things that I try to do, even before it's a discussion on dollars, right? Weeks before, months before, is I want to understand how I'm being measured. And I want to understand the current measurement process perspective of my direct manager, my boss's boss, the highest executive I can get. So that if that expectation of excellence that I believe I'm delivering is different than they think they're receiving, I can manage that gap before there's a financial discussion linked to my success or my capabilities or my delivery. And so most people think that they're negotiating for what their value is around review time. Most of the time, it's too late. Most of the time, people are put into categories in an organization. Budgets are already done. And you're negotiating a super small window of 3% versus 5%, 4% versus 5%. When throughout the year, if you're negotiating your value based on results you're delivering, how you can be of service to the organization, things that you're doing that have a financial impact, that are moving markets, growing market share, handling more responsibility, then when it's time to have a fiscal conversation, you're able to have many case studies of things you've done, delivered, and decisions you've made that have helped the organization move through. And so a lot of times those of us that end up frustrated that we don't get the financial outcome is because we're trying to have a big conversation in a small box versus widening the box of conversation throughout the year. The other component is that anytime we're negotiating for ourselves, it's very difficult not to make it personal, because that raise is a reflection of how the organization thinks of us. And we usually don't think about the full context, right, of how that decision was made. And so again, another thing that I do when it's personal or somebody that I'm coaching or counseling is I want them earlier in the year, even at the negotiating table, talk about the characteristics that the team would like to see in me to ensure that I am considered, both now and in the future, a high performer. Here's the thing about being considered a high performer. Here's the thing about getting your leader to say that you're a high performer. High performers have different rules than everybody else in the business. That means if there's a 5% raise cap, most organizations have exceptions for high performers. If there's a freeze on external conferences, if there is a freeze on learning opportunities, high performers usually get an opportunity to work around those. So you want to understand throughout the year whether or not your boss, your boss's boss, considers you a high performer, and if not, why, so you can close those gaps. And again, this isn't negotiation technique. It's more about the mental model to prepare to have the conversation. You know, if you think about it from the metaphor of a farmer, You don't just go out and plant seed. You prepare the ground. You prepare the soil to make sure that the environment is ready for when that seed is planted, it can grow successfully. It's the same thing you do with a negotiation or a conversation on salary. If we want to talk about negotiation in our daily lives, I'll tell a quick story, and it's a pretty good one. And so very fortunate, and then I've worked hard over the years. I am blessed to have a beautiful wife who I adore. Recently, it was around Valentine's Day, I wanted to get her something memorable, right? We're going on 5 years of being married. I wanted to step my game up and really buy something that was nice. But I still have a budget. Like I still have, you know, I had in my mind and really cemented the type of dollars I wanted to spend on this jewelry. So I go into a jewelry store that I've frequented before and know the folks in there. And I won't name drop because the parts of the story are pretty funny. So anyway, so I go in there and I look, I pick out a couple things. And the thing that I really wanted to buy for Jackie was several thousand dollars out of range, like several, like lots, thousands of dollars out of range, but it was beautiful. And I knew it would look great on her and I wanted this piece, but I was like, nah, there's a lot going on. A couple of big trips coming, a couple of investments want to make. And this is just not the right time to overspend on this. So I tell this to the young lady who's helping me and leave the store, no big deal. And I'm getting ready to walk to a different jewelry store that I had called, had some similar pieces, more in range. And so I was about ready to go into this second store. My phone rings. And I didn't recognize the number, but I picked up. And it was the general manager of the jewelry store that I just left. He said, Mr. Thompson, you've been a loyal customer. We want to earn your business. Is there anything I can do to help? You know, the same drill. We've all been familiar with this. I was like, nah, not really. I said, your price is your price. You gave me a little 20% discount. This is what I'm looking to pay for the piece. And it seems like we're pretty far away. So, you know, I'm good. But I appreciate everything you do. And I understand where you're coming from. And the general manager on the phone said, Mr. Thompson, may I ask you something? I said, sure. Can you just stay still for 2 minutes? Do not go into the other jewelry store. And I'll call you back with my best offer and if we can have the piece ready today. I said, yeah, I got 2 minutes. No big deal. So I stand there for 2 minutes. Gentleman calls me back. And we align on a price that is fair enough for both. And he moves significantly. And the reason I'm telling you this on a negotiation component is even though I wanted this piece, even though I wanted to have this piece for my wife, I try not to make finances, economics, and emotion mix together. My ability to walk away, my ability to have other alternatives, my ability to not become emotional about a single transaction gave me the ability then to receive the call, get probably $5,000 savings in a new cost, and I was able to get something really nice at a price point that I could afford. But if I was emotionally tied to that item, if I was emotionally tied to the timing because it was actually Valentine's Day, if I had a perceived notion of status by buying this particular piece, then I would have overpaid. And so one of the things that I like to share with folks is we've talked about one, perception of who are you dealing with. Timing. The more time pressure you have, the less flexibility you have. The power dynamic and personality. In this instance, as the consumer, I had the power dynamic because this jeweler didn't want to end up with zero. I'd already left the store. I was already on the way to another store, was not headed back that day to make a purchase. And because those things were in my favor, I saved thousands of dollars. There was an example of someone I was coaching. And they had received a job offer from HR. Anytime you receive an offer, that means you're the candidate that the hiring manager wants. You're the candidate that has gotten through all of the various interviews. They have deemed you the top choice for that role at that moment. And typically in job offers, they put a time limit on it. It's not you have 6 weeks to make a decision. You usually have a few days. This is one of the top moments to go back and ask to adjust the offer. A lot of reasons there's a disparity in, you know, we talk about the gender pay gap. One of the things that I try to talk about with folks is whose responsibility is it if I make more than my counterpart because I was a better negotiator, because I'd learned that skill, because I had the confidence to negotiate. And so what we have to teach people is, yes, there is a corporate responsibility to pay equitably for similar skills, same role, those things. But it is also incumbent of us in talking about teaching on the topic of negotiation to ask for more, to ask if there's an opportunity to structure this offer differently in a couple of areas. And usually the first offer that people give you is not their best and final. But if you take it, and then you're mad later on, if you take it, and then you're disgruntled, I mean, I guess you could be. It makes sense. But it's also whose responsibility is it to understand the business dynamics, the perspective, the power dynamics. When you get that offer, they've said that we want you to fill this position with our firm. And usually it's been my experience. There is different components that can be moved, maneuvered, right? Vacation time, salary, bonus. One of the easiest, hardest thing to move is salary. Easier thing to move is bonus that is performance-based and tied to. Now, you may want all, but what I'm telling you is when you talk to that HR leader, call them back and say, listen, is this best and final, or is there some potential flexibility in a couple of areas? I'd love to say yes. And I think we're really, really close. There's just a couple things around the edges that I'd love to discuss, but I don't want to put a lot of time and effort into dialoguing it if there's no room to navigate here. And usually the person on the other end of the line will say, well, what do you have in mind? And that's the only answer I need right now. Listen, let's not have this conversation right now. Let me take a step back, look at the full offer, just do a little digging on some comparables. And let me send you a short email of just a couple things that I'm thinking to give you all an opportunity to react to it. But again, I want you to understand, I'm really excited about this opportunity. I think we're close, but I do have a couple things that I want to come back to you on. And then you take a step back because you got the answer you desired, which is this is not best and final. And most HR folks are not rock star negotiator. They're coloring right in the lines that they've been given. In order for you to get the best dollar amount for your skills means you've got to push it to the point where the person on the other end of the line has to say, I can't approve this. Give me a day. I'm going to have to talk with some people internally to see if we can get this done. Now you know you're rocking, right? If you get an offer and it's $100,000 and you counter with 103 and they go, yeah, that makes sense. That's not negotiating in good faith for you and your family. You want to nudge it to where they have to ask someone else and reaffirm that you are the absolute right candidate at the right moment at the right time. I was working on a pretty large M&A transaction, and we were going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And after about a week, the VC firm said, look, this is the best we got. I'm like, cool. Because what do I want? The worst you got? The first you got? The second or third you got? No, I want your best you got. And usually that takes several conversations, several push and pull to get somebody to that point to where, hey, this is the best we can do. You're going to need to take this or leave this, but this we've given everywhere we can give. Works for me. Let me reflect on that, come back to you. Now I know I've done a good job. You don't have to be a jerk about it. You don't have to be overly aggressive about it, but you have to be intentional about it. And then the second thing that you got to remember all the time is when you're going to deal with folks post-negotiation, how you treat them, how you push, how you're firm but gracious are all things that are going to set the table for how you're treated inside the new organization, how you're treated as a new employee, right? How you're treated the second or third time you're going to buy a car. Whatever the scenario is, right? Be firm, be gracious, but be intentional about pushing the envelope until you get to somebody's best and final. And that's the number or numbers you want to make a decision on. The final thing that I want to really talk about is knowing the level of decision rights of the team that you're talking to. A lot of times you're going to be dealing with, I don't want to call it front people, but folks that are going to tee up an agreement to then be reviewed by very senior levels in management. And this is whether this is a partnership agreement, salary discussion, M&A discussion, XYZ. And these are great folks, powerful, influential, but not the final deciders. And so one of the nuances to successfully negotiating is getting to the point where you can have a conversation with the folks you're chatting with and ask this very simple question. What does a successful outcome of this dialogue look like for you? The reason you want to understand this person's point of view, whether it is timing, whether it is throughput, right? How fast another side can do something. It's important to have, and I always have like a spreadsheet or a notebook with all of the different elements of the negotiating conversation. So for example, what is it that you want my firm or me to do? How much are you going to pay when we do this? What is the timing? If you're going to pay me dollars and we're negotiating, what are the terms? Right? Is it net 5, 15, net 60? Big enterprise companies try to do this to small companies all the time because big companies make money on their float, right? Which is the gazillions of dollars they have in banking institutions and different things. So the faster they can take money in, the slower they can expense money out, they can make money just on the holding of millions of dollars of currency. But as a small business owner, cash flow is everything. So if I do work over a 30-day period of time, I invoice you for that work, and then you're going to pay me 60 days later for that work, no, thank you. It's a terrible deal for a small business owner. But that's one of the levers in term, right? So it's the amount someone's going to pay you. It's the term they're going to pay you. It's the currency they're going to pay you. It is how do you handle problems or disputes? And so when you look at all of these elements, right? I remember having a negotiation dialogue with a billion-dollar global company. And we're a small tech company in Raleigh. 20 people, they got 20,000 people. And we came to an impasse on the hourly rate for our consultants. We just came to an impasse. What we wanted, what they wanted was just different. And neither side really, we were talking across each other. And it just, it was a tough part of the deal. Understood where they were coming from because we were US-based. So much of their supplier base was in other theaters. So Belarus, India, South America, right? And so our consultants were US-based and significantly higher cost, but we were worth it, right? The skills that we brought to the table were worth it. The work that we did, the quality, our reputation, our experience, all of that. But we got to a point in an impasse. And I remember thinking, all right, how do we get this done? And what do we need that a big company can do pretty easily? And we'd been a supplier of this firm for years, so there was trust built, but we couldn't get over the goal line, so to speak. And I remember saying to my counterpart, you can't increase your rate. What if you pay me a quarter in advance for services that we're going to render? because that helps me with my cash flow that then helps my entire business, even though I know you can't meet the rate that I need that I can get from other folks. And I remember the gentleman on the other side was quiet for a minute. And he said, DT, because we negotiated a lot of deals together. He said, I wish I would have thought of that. I absolutely can do that. Right? Fronting you the cash. You all have done the work. You've been trusted partners. So paying you in advance each quarter, but keeping the rate the same, that's something I can take to our team. I can get that done for you. And so for the next 4 years of this relationship, we basically leveraged the cash flow from one of our biggest partners to help us grow other areas of our business and ultimately get sold and acquired, and a lot of good things happen. But it was because we weren't having a contentious negotiation. We had a conversation. We had a dialogue. And when we met with a roadblock, we jointly tried to figure out creative solutions together, and we did. And that was one of the most successful conversations that I've had in my business career, because we found a way to win together. We found a way to overcome the negative connotation to negotiation and have a business conversation that the needs of both were met. We continue to be partners for many years. In summary, you want to understand the perspective of who you're negotiating with, their point of view, their goals, their needs. You want to manage timing, which means you want to get to a negotiating conversation as soon as you can so that time is on your side. You want to manage a negotiation conversation if you're an employee based on being a high performer as we go. So timing is both in performance before the salary discussion as well as that window of negotiation. You want to understand the personality and the power dynamics of the folks that you're talking to. And then the final thing is that you want to make sure that you're having a conversation where we get to that win-win together, that we figure out roadblocks together. I've used the phrase throughout this conversation in talking about my negotiating partner, because it's my hope, my goal, my aspiration that everybody that I'm talking to is a negotiation partner, not an adversary. And then the final thought process is, when you deal with that high-octane personality, that person that is trying to drive the dialogue, that person that's trying to put their thumb on you, make sure that before you engage in that back and forth, you try to de-escalate, understand their true careabouts, and always try to be the grown-up in the room. I wish you all the best as you negotiate salary with your kids to clean your room for that car that you want to buy, or in the case of the example I gave, the jewelry that we talked about. But I think your timing, your temperament, the way that you approach negotiation is going to be better because of some of these experiences we've discussed. And I think you'll be stronger the more that you do it and the more that you do it with this mindset. So with that, DT and over and out, hopefully this helped. And thanks for spending time with us on another episode of High Octane Leadership. And today we've talked about the art of negotiation, building bridges, not walls. Thank you for joining us on High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. Today's episode is a step in our collective journey towards leadership excellence. Remember, every story we share and every insight we gain is a piece in the puzzle of our leadership journey. For more insight and detail, hit the subscribe button so that we can stay connected. For deeper information and more episodes, go to donaldthompson.com. Continue to lead with vision and purpose, and until we meet again, embrace your role as a high-octane leader in the ever-evolving world of business.